When you decide to make a career change, how do you choose your new path? Well, you can't know exactly where the road will lead. You can at least know the general direction that it will take you. And this is exactly what Ben McAdam decided to do with his transition. With a background in music, he wanted to learn business. So he followed that thread, and it led to some surprising places and ultimately to what he's doing today. As a virtual CFO and profits coach, he helps businesses and business owners improve their financials and ultimately make more money. I had so much fun talking with Ben. He's the kind of guest that I feel like I could just talk to forever. We have so many shared interests, whether it be business or music or meaning and career. We go to all kinds of great places. I think you'll really enjoy this conversation. This, of course, is the Meaning Movement podcast, a show about work worth doing. I'm your host, Dan Cumberland, and today with guest Ben McAdam. Stay with us. Can you imagine waking up on Monday mornings excited about your day? Can you imagine loving being asked the question, "So, what do you do?" I created the Calling Course with a single goal in mind, to create a resource for finding what's next. The Calling Course is based on the process I developed through working with people around the big career transitions that we all go through. I went so far as to get a master's degree in psychology and culture to bring this concept to life, and I'd like to invite you to consider joining us. If you've ever felt stuck, if you've ever felt uncertain of what's next, if you've ever felt like you want more from your work, but you're not sure how to get it, I made this for you. Join us. Get started for free today with a mini course called 5 Clues to Your Calling at thecallingcourse.com. I'll see you there. Ben, thank you so much for joining me. Welcome to the Meaning Movement podcast.
Thanks, Dan. Great to be here.
So the question I like to begin with is, how do you begin to talk about the work that you do in the world?
This was a problem for me, actually, for a little while, about describing it in a way that made sense, because I you know, historically not so good at it, but
yeah.
For what I do, so I consider myself a profits coach and virtual CFO. So it's my job to help business owners generate more profit out of their business. You know, what they want to spend it on, it's up to them. Might be growth back in the business, might be pulling out for themselves. So I help them generate more profits, and I help them understand the numbers, what they mean, and how to use them to make important decisions.
I love it. It sounds like you spend a lot of time with spreadsheets.
Yes, but not as much as you would think. Honestly, there is a lot that you can do with napkin math, and therefore not scare away a bunch of people who don't love spreadsheets as much as I do.
How much of it is the spreadsheets and numbers, and how much of it is mindset and approach, strategy?
Yeah, good question. So for what I do, I use the numbers as like a diagnosis tool. And then after that, it's like regular business coaching. So for example, you know, one client, it might turn out that, you know, their profits aren't so good. So we look at some numbers, look at some ratios, look at their income statement. And we find out that the problem is that they're spending too much on marketing compared to the amount of revenue that they're getting. So we go, okay, let's dig a little deeper. It turns out the return on their marketing is not good enough. It doesn't line up with reasonable benchmarks. And so then I have a conversation with them. I say, okay, here's what I found. Most businesses don't have to spend this much on Facebook ads or in order to get the amount of sales that you're getting from it. So here's the conversation to have with your Facebook ads person. And you know, these are typical things that you can tweak. This is what you can ask them. If they can't answer these questions, it means maybe we start searching for a new Facebook ads person, for example. It's just like finding the problem is very clear with numbers. Whereas like when you ask somebody what the problem is, they're like, oh, I think really the problem is that I'm not so good on sales calls. I'm like, nope. Mm. Looks like according to these benchmarks, you're actually really good on sales calls. Let's not mess with that. Let's stop signing up for sales call courses. And in your case, let's just get you more leads with a better marketing return.
I love it. Well, I have loads of other questions related to all of that as a business owner, but I think where I'd like to start is did you always envision yourself speaking numbers? Did you always have a goal similar to this in mind with your career?
Well, actually, no. One of the things we talked about before is that I actually started my studies after school at university in music. I was doing a music education degree at the Sydney Conservatorium of Music, and my major was classical piano. That was the instrument that I was specializing in during the education course. And I got about a year and a half into that degree and decided that the following semester was where you go into schools and you do the practice training. I'm like, no. I don't want to be a school teacher. That's not why I did this education degree. And I realized as I was there that there are so few opportunities to earn a decent amount of money as a musician.
Yeah.
And especially a classical musician.
Yep.
So luckily, a couple of years ago, somebody gave me the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. And I read that and I'm like, aha, here's another way that you can make money apart from the traditional script of go get a job, which bored the tears out of me. And I didn't even have a job yet. Could not stand that kind of idea. And the three different ways he said you can make money: with investments, with real estate, with business. And business really actually captured my imagination because none of my relatives have been in business. So this was like a new thing. I didn't realize it was possible. And he said something in the book about, everything you see around you, like the lines on the road, there is a business behind that. And it's just like, wow, it's like the magic is everywhere moment.
Yes. And just a side note on that, because that's such a great point. I was just telling my wife the other day, I wish that if I could have one superpower, would be able to look at anything and see the spreadsheet that it's based on. And which is just another way of saying that same thing. Like, I want to be able to look at the line on the road and then see how that's profitable for someone to be, like, how that business runs. I think it would be amazing. Anyways, not to interrupt, but I think you could appreciate that as a numbers guy.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fascinating. For me, I always like things with complicated little details that all work together to do one thing. And so looking at the line on the roads and realizing the business structure and the processes and the materials and the people, and then the business that supplies that business, and it's fun. It's very fractal. If you just keep going, there's more detail.
Down the rabbit hole.
The other thing that was in the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, that this was the big thing that set me the path I am now, is that he said that the lawyer and the accountant see everything that happens in the business. Business owners should be involving them in all the major decisions. And I'm like, yes, because that's how I can learn about business, is if I can see everything.
Yeah.
And so my choices were lawyer or accountant. It was really helpful to have it narrowed down to two, especially when one of them's an obvious hell no, that's the lawyer side. So I'm like, okay, what is an accountant? What does the accountant do? And off I went. It was when I hit that point with my music education degree where I'm like, I don't want to be a teacher, where, it actually hit me like this path has an end that I'm on and I don't really want to head that way. It's been fun learning about music and focusing on practicing piano and whatnot, but I need to make sure I'm on the right path. And so accounting was where I jumped into, and grateful that I had something else when I hit that realization moment with the music.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sounds like you were still pretty young, pretty early in the process. You hadn't invested, in multiple degrees yet. down that path.
Yes,
but it sounds like your decision to pursue music initially was really motivated by passion and just love for the music, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And someone had told me, when I was young, just do what you love and the money will come, or do what you love and figure out a way to make it work. And I like the sentiment behind that. It turns out I don't like the logic behind it.
Yeah.
Because you can't abdicate responsibility for making sure that you're generating enough money to support yourself and your family. Like, that's the bit I don't like, is that sense of like, I don't have to think about it. It's not my responsibility.
Yeah.
But I definitely like the idea of prioritizing, follow your passion and what you find most meaningful. And that was the decision I made to go from music into accounting, which was, I thought, was my learning pathway to get into business.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like at that moment, did you see the potential in business as taking the place of that passion for music as a new passion? Or I guess I'm curious in just about your thoughts about that.
Mm-hmm.
Do what you love piece. Like, did you see a path towards loving your work in that switch?
I did. I think the big difference for me, like, I had three passions at that time. One was learning more about business and, you know, buying lots of Robert Kiyosaki books.
Yes.
So good at selling books. So yeah, that was one. Music, the piano was another one. And then the third one for me was, like, I was an administrator and coder and quality checker for an online text-based game. You know, this is before the World of Warcraft, where they had graphics.
Yes.
I was doing that kind of thing. And so being a programmer was something I was very interested in, because I like, I don't know, when I was a kid, you had those little Lego robot packs that got to play with on a school excursion, where, like, you give the instructions and then the robot goes and does something. And that really appealed to the lazy person inside me.
Yes.
Just write the instructions and then off it goes. Yeah.
I think that would be my five-year-old son's dream right there, if you could just boss robots around and have them do a bidding.
Absolutely. But for me, when I hit that crunch point with my music degree, is that I looked at the path. If I followed each of these passions, what would I most likely have to do in order to make money? If I followed the programming, it was a job in, you know, commuting into the city. And I'm like, no way, I'm not commuting into the city. Turns out I did it for about 8 weeks as an accountant, and I loathed it. If I followed the music, there was, like, big question mark over making the kind of money that I wanted to, you know, have the lifestyle that I wanted. And so the accounting, I'm like, yes, I deal with numbers, and man, some of the stuff that accountants have to deal with is just tedious dotting of I's and crossing of T's stuff that computers should be doing more of.
Yeah.
At the time, I thought this. Now computers do, thank God. And but if I followed accountant, there was the business stuff was at the end of that path. And so I'm like, okay, well, that made it a bit of an easy choice for me. As far as whether it became more of a passion, I think I was a little burnt out over the music thing, because I was really stressed being at the Sydney Conservatory of Music, because that's like, oh, it's a big deal. And there are, like, internationally successful musicians just kind of roaming the walls and saying hi, roaming the halls and saying hi as they pass you, and teaching you in classes. And, like, my piano teacher was a Russian lady who was brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and my other teachers, and they were, like, normal people being nice and polite, as well as, like, international superstars. And, like, I was in there going, I've only really been seriously playing piano for a few years, like, I don't belong here, like, all the imposter syndrome stuff was going on. So it was a bit I was a bit burnt out from that at the time. So
yeah,
I mean, I'm still passionate about music. I still do it. I recorded to recording to sing in a virtual choir, but at the other day. But and I have a local choir I sing in. And I still play for fun. But for me, there was more potential in business, and I was really excited to see what lay down that path.
I love it. And before we, you know, move too far from Robert Kiyosaki, I want to mention for listeners that his book Rich Dad Poor Dad is just, it's a fantastic, I guess, starting point, I think, of a lot of people's journey towards, you know, understanding, having better grasp on finances, building wealth, becoming maybe more entrepreneurial, generating, I guess, setting yourself up for financial success. So definitely, you know, recommend that.
Mm.
But back to you, Ben, I'm curious about, so coding, accounting, and piano. I often think about people and talk to people about their work, because people come to me asking about how do I find my calling, and, you know, what is, you know, talk about these kind of big themes of, like, what's the purpose of my life, and all of these things, and how does that intersect with work. And I often tell people that your calling whatever word you want to put to that, your purpose is not a job. Like, I think that's a really important misconception that a lot of people have. Your job is a way, an opportunity to express that. It's like a muscle that you can flex, but there's lots of ways that you can go about doing that. And when I think of those three, I guess, options on the table that you're at that juncture in your life, I can see how there's this Venn diagram of like, they're very different, but there's like this overlap of attention to detail, right? That, you know, classical pianists, like, you have to have every single note, right? You're not a jazz, you know, doing improvisation. Like, it's, and then, you know, coding, like, you have to, every keystroke makes the code work. And if there's one that's out of place, it doesn't work. And accounting, like, the same, but with numbers. And I'm curious for you, if you feel like there's like when you're at that fork in the road, like, do you feel like that there's a related energy behind each of those paths? Or was it just like, these are just three things that were in front of me?
Definitely a related thing. It's not as much the keeping everything perfect and tidy and doing it the right way as you might think.
Yeah.
Like, for example, when I actually started doing accounting, I didn't really gel with the other accountants because they think that way and I don't. I'm a little bit more creative. And I don't mean creative accounting like lying and fudging.
It's important distinction.
Yes. But for me with programming, what I was doing was like, I was creating a set of systems that other players could interact with. And there were a variety of ways that players could interact with it, and something fun or interesting would happen and present them with more interesting choices. And for me, when I play piano, I don't actually like the having to train yourself to be a robot that can do this, the thing right over and over and over again. That was like, that's actually part of the reason why it was hard for me at the conservatorium, because like, this doesn't, you know, this turning myself into a music robot is not what my passion was. My passion was making beautiful music and having people who are listening, including myself, like, be transported. Like, I had an experience, the experience that got me into classical piano in the first place is that I heard this piece called The Heart Asks Pleasure First by Michael Nyman. It's from the soundtrack of the movie The Piano many years ago. And I heard that and I was just like stunned. It was beautiful. It was amazing. Like, it was simple. I could feel the patterns in it, but it just like, it worked and it was beautiful. And like, I wanted to be able to give other people that experience and have it again myself by, you know, playing these pieces of music. And when it comes to like the business side of things, I don't really enjoy arranging numbers and analyzing numbers. Like, that's not the passion for me. The passion is that what it can do for people's lives, like the business owners, the team members, everybody, it's their families, the suppliers even.
Yeah.
A business that's run well provides fantastic opportunities and meaning for people, gives them excellent quality of life, that, you know, they have a good experience when they're at the business, whether that's the business owner or the team members, like, they then take that good mood and good energy back to their families and their communities. Like, it's very powerful thing. I know I say I'm a profits coach and I help people grow their profits, but like, there's very meaningful reasons behind it for me that I'm really passionate about.
Yeah, I love that. It's a really beautiful way to think about, I think, all of those things, music, programming, and as well as, you know, the profit coaching that you're doing now. Well said. Very well said.
Thank you.
So after starting down this path towards accounting, like, accounting is one thing. What you're doing now is related but different. And so what was some of that path, that portion of your journey like?
It was an experimental one, like figuring out, I mean, apart from learning accounting, which it's not really that complicated. It's boring, but not complicated.
I love talking to an accountant or someone with an accounting background, just hearing accounting is really boring.
Yeah.
It's great.
So it was a bit of an experimental thing. I first got, as I was studying, I was working 3 to 5 days a week throughout my studies. I started as like a, you know, an apprentice type role in an accounting practice, a suburban accounting practice with only a couple of accountants in it. And so I got the opportunity to practice like bookkeeping and tax returns. in practice, which, man, was that valuable. If anybody's actually listening to this, thinking about going into accounting, don't just study for 3 years and then go get a job, because what they teach you in universities is not quite the same emphasis as what you'll actually be doing day to day.
Interesting.
And so I worked in a suburban practice for a while, and then they merged and there was like no career progression options because the business, they just weren't focusing on growing it fast enough. So I was getting bored, couldn't really see, I didn't want to stay where I was. Like, it was always a stepping stone for me to getting into business, and they were at that practice, there was no path there. So I thought, oh, I'll go work in the city. That's where like there's promotion opportunities and more money, right? I'm like, no, I lasted 8 weeks before I'm like, I don't have another job to go to, but I'm still leaving this one. I will like go be a music tutor if I need to make ends meet.
Definitely had a strong no on that one.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it turns out that it was interesting that music brought me back, is because I went to my choir rehearsal and, you know, I was telling them, and then the choir director got up the front and said, yeah, Ben's just left his job as an accountant in the city. If anybody knows of some accounting work or some, you know, music teaching work for Ben, just let him know. And I'm like, wow, that was nice to say that kind
That's
of thing.
Awesome.
And the guy sitting behind me taps me on the shoulder and says, hey, Ben, I need a financial controller. Is that, you know, run these couple of businesses and I need someone to run the accounts department. And I'm like, yeah, sounds good. And so I became an accountant inside a business. I'm like, yes, my path. This is the where I wanted to go. I was so excited.
Yes, I love it.
So that job, I turned it from a 2 4-hour days a week to, I absorbed two admin assistants, and the person whose part of their job was managing them turned it into a full-time role, streamlined everything. And I'm like, oh, there's nowhere further I can go with this. And so went to work for a real estate office, series of real estate offices as their financial controller. And boy, was it interesting to see behind the curtain of what real estate agents are like when there's no buyers or sellers in the room.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it was, it's fun to daydream and allude that they were, you know, they're horrible money grabbing people or whatever, but no, it was like, they're just real people. Some of them are great. Some of them suck. Some of them are way too aggressive that they're horrible human beings to work with, but successful at sales and, you know, treat the buyers and sellers well. Yeah. It was a bit of an eye opener, but one of the things that advanced my, you know, I'm glad that I took that, because again, it gave me clarity on what I don't want to do. Like, I don't want to run a real estate for a sales agency. But also, from where my office was, I heard their sales training.
Mm.
And so I learned a little bit about how sales works for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, what kind of things were involved. Not doing it the real estate agent way. It might be leading people down the, giving people the wrong idea, but just like the importance of handling objections and how to handle objections earlier in the sales call so there are no objections at the end.
Yeah.
Things like, you know, how to build rapport quickly and make sure that the person in front of you is actually in a place for ready to buy before you waste your time pitching them.
Mm.
The value of getting referrals out of people if you can't get a sale, like the extra little details that don't pop into your mind when you think of sales if you haven't seen that kind of thing before. So even though it was not the most ideal however many months that I was with them, I did learn a lot. And it was good to be inside a business because, like I had hoped, I learned about business.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And so, well, I guess just to clarify for people listening, financial controller, can you define that role? Is that similar to a CFO? Is that how we should think about that? I don't know if that's just a term that is less common in the States as opposed to Australia, or if that's just not a term I've encountered as much.
Yeah, so financial controller and CFO are normally titles for much bigger businesses, like hundreds of millions of dollars. Like a CFO is chief financial officer. It's like big corporate business that has a CEO will have a CFO and a CTO or a COO. There's a CMO. There's lots of C something O roles.
Yep.
But what it basically means is that there's two parts to it. One is like you manage the finance department. You're like the head of the finance department. So it's your responsibility to make sure the bookkeeping gets done, the reports are produced, that all the government filings and compliance is dealt with. Not necessarily like lodging the tax returns yourself or doing the bookkeeping yourself, but making sure they get done. So there's like that manager of the finance department aspect to it. And then there's also the strategic advice part to it. So, you know, someone says, you know, I want to open this new real estate office in this place. And so the strategic advisor would say something like, all right, we'll put a series of costs together. We'll put a cash flow projection together on how quickly we think this thing will pay for itself and therefore how much money we need to borrow at what terms. And then not, you know, not just putting the analysis together and then presenting, but also making recommendations. We're like, okay, this is going to take 12 to 18 months to be able to pay for itself based on the number of buyers and the growth in this particular region and the number of salespeople we can already transfer over there and the number of potential people in the market we can hire. We're going to need to borrow about this much, which means that things are going to be tight for the first 6 months. We will not be able to start any other growth projects in the business. So let's spend some time thinking about what they are. Mm. And so, yeah, there's the finance manager and then there's the strategic advice aspect of it. Whether it's a financial controller or a CFO, like that's generally what it means for a small business.
Yeah, got it.
In a large business, there's some extra other things, like a financial controller is the person who makes sure the money moves where it's supposed to and only the right people have access to transfer it and things like that.
Yeah.
But what I was doing was the manager and advisor part.
Nice. Yeah. And so in a lot of ways, it sounds like it's very similar work to what you do now, except at that time you were working in a particular business and now you're working outside for, you know, a bunch of businesses. Is that a good kind of understanding of it?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a few I actually work inside of. Like I actually do the manager part and they have a team and I make sure that payments move smoothly where they're supposed to and handle any questions with the billing process and things like that. That's like one of my favorite clients calls me a safety net.
I love it.
an extra pair of eyes and a safety net for anything going on the money.
Yep.
But for one of my clients, I'm their unofficial head of growth too, which is like totally unrelated.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. Mm. I guess as you're saying that, it's kind of like, you know, in soccer or, you know, football in another country. So I'm like, oh, you're kind of like the goalkeeper, but then like, maybe you're also playing forward. Like, where would you put yourself on the soccer field, on the football field?
Honestly, I'd be the coach on the side.
Yeah.
Most of the time. Occasionally, I step on the field.
Yep.
But most of the time, when people come to me, like, they have the time or the team or the financial resources in place to have somebody else on the soccer field that's not me, which is helpful because I'm a very expensive goalkeeper. Sometimes.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, there are cheaper goalkeepers that can do just as good a job with a little coaching from me.
Yep.
And so that's a high leverage thing. It's better for my client. It's also better for me because I get to focus on more of what I love to do rather than sitting in the goals.
Yep.
And I get to help more people. So yeah, that's a good analogy. Thank you for bringing that up.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We came up with it together, I think. We came out of the conversation. So I'm curious, when you made that transition from, you know, being a player on the field to, you know, working in the business to consulting and, you know, kind of changing your approach to your work, because it's a mindset switch from being an employee to a business owner. And I'm curious about that, that piece of your process.
Yeah. Well, for me, I actually got a bit of a shot of motivation because my first child was on the way. And I had moved from the real estate agency. I'd gone back into working in a tax practice because I wanted my qualification. I needed extra hours to have experience to get the license in order to run my own tax practice. And I saw that as the quickest path for me to get into business. So I went back into a tax practice and my baby girl was on the way. And I'm like, at the time, I was only intending to have one. Now I have four. But anyway, at the time, I was only intending to have one child. And so like every moment, especially when they were like just a baby, was critical. That was like once in a lifetime stuff that I rearranged the rest of my life around. Like that's the priority level in my head it was. And so I thought, oh, crap, I'm going to miss out on so much if I'm working in somebody else's office.
Yeah.
So I hustled my butt off in order to get the qualification I need and then start getting some leads, getting some clients that I could do the work from home. And it worked well enough for me to be able to stay home with my daughter for when she was young. For the first 6 months, I was doing accounting at, you know, tax returns and a bit of bookkeeping for people. And then about 6 months in, the opportunity came to start an online bookkeeping business with another accountant who had similar values. Not Not because she wanted to spend time with children, but because she really likes surfing.
Yeah.
So, like, we wanted flexibility. We didn't want to have to go into work. We wanted enough money to support our lifestyles. And so working for ourselves from home ticked all the boxes. And we got into business together.
Love it. I love it. And how long ago was that?
Sorry?
How old is your daughter? How long ago was that transition?
She's 7.5.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're a seasoned veteran at this point.
Yeah. I ended up selling my tax practice and selling that online bookkeeping business that we started. And I've been doing this profits coaching and virtual CFO thing for many years now. And I'm really grateful that this is what I get to do all day.
Yeah. I love it. That's awesome. Well, I'm curious for you as someone who has navigated the questions about passion and purpose, where are you going? Knowing that a lot of people are listening and have these things that they love and want to figure out how to go pro, how to make them a job. I'm curious, just your thoughts on it in general, to know, like, if someone's thinking about wanting to take their art full time, mm-hmm. or their writing, or especially the creative things where it is harder to make money. Like, how would you advise someone like that in thinking, like, how should they think about what's next for themselves?
Yeah. Happy to help. I think it's possible to make money from what you are passionate about and from what gives you meaning. It's possible to make money in surprising ways from it. And sometimes with creative people that I've worked with, like, they feel icky making money, as if that taints what they're doing.
Yeah.
I really love that Patreon is a thing. I think it's brilliant because not only because it's a way for people to make money, but it's also because it shows people that you can make money from it in a way that doesn't feel icky. Like, are giving value to people, and it's like, there are so many examples on Patreon of, different tiers of rewards and different amounts of money that people can do, different benefits that they get, different levels of communication. And so, like, there's a lot of examples there that you can follow in any field that you want, and some surprising fields if you actually get down the Patreon rabbit hole. There's some very surprising ones down there.
Yes.
And this is an extension of a concept that I came across. It was Kevin Kelly, his 1,000 true fans idea. And he wrote a blog post about it or something. But the key message that I got for it that was a real light bulb moment for me was, all you need is 1,000 true fans who are willing to pay you $100 a year in some fashion for your art or for what you do. So it could be, 1,000 people that are paying you $8.33 a month on a Patreon thing. And that's $100,000 a year, which is more than enough to support yourself, to have a good life, and to pay for any supplies and materials you need for what you do. And it doesn't even have to be 1,000. Like, the number is actually probably quite a bit lower for a lot of people. And I love that idea. Like, I especially when you combine it with looking at the examples on Patreon, like, there's a bunch of people that I follow I support on Patreon that have, 100, maybe 200 patrons on there. And I can mentally add up, if Patreon doesn't say the amount that person's actually being supported by, like, I can actually mentally add up an estimate of how much they're getting from them. I'm like, yeah, that's actually a pretty decent amount of money with such a small number of people. And, like, there are ways to grow from there. Like, looking at the top tier on Patreon is a great way to get ideas. But there's a couple of other things I want to mention.
Yeah.
Like, lots of different ways of monetizing what you do, like ad revenue if you do something on YouTube, product placement for people who, like, create content on Instagram, like recommending products and getting a commission from them, only if you actually like and enjoy that product. If you would really recommend it, then you can get some sort of commissions. You can get referral commissions. Like, for example, if you're doing your art and somebody does your video editing, or somebody has done a fantastic job on a website for you, like, you can get a referral commission for recommending them to the people who follow you or the people in your audience. Like, building an audience around what you do is surprisingly easy. Again, go on YouTube. There's channels with tons and tons of views doing surprising things. There's people on social media with lots of followers. Like, you get an audience, and there are lots of ways to monetize that in ways that you're comfortable with. so that you can just mainly you can just focus on your art, like producing an experience that people are interested in following along to, or like, you know, update photos on the painting that your big painting that you're working on. Like, you know, I keep mentioning video, but it doesn't have to be. And, you know, be on Pinterest or Instagram, take photos of what you're doing. Like, there are so many ways to make money from your passion that if I was to go back in time, the advice I would give to younger Ben, who is in that transition with his three passions, is keep going with the music and put some videos on YouTube, you know, of your piano playing. Keep going with the programming, but, you know, move to an online game that pays an amount to their developers, or create your own smaller games instead of like being a contributor. That is an enormous thing. Create your own smaller games. Yeah. You can make little bits of money to fund this and to quote unquote justify the time spent on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there a part of yourself that, well, I mean, just all that is fantastic advice for anyone is unfamiliar with Patreon. It's a platform where it comes from the idea of a patron of the arts, where you could contribute usually small amounts on a monthly basis to artists and creators that you enjoy, podcasts, lots of others. So just to define it for listeners, if you're unfamiliar. But I'm curious, you know, just about, you know, what you said about, you know, advice to younger Ben. Is there any part of you that wishes that you had continued in either of those other directions?
No, not really. Honestly, one of the things I realized very early on is that those particular passions would get ruined if I had to consider money and make a job out of it. For me, I am involved in music as much as I want to. Like I playing piano at least every couple of days. I sing in a choir every week. It was two before COVID. And, you know, like I said earlier, there's like a virtual, I'm starting to get involved in virtual choirs where I record things singing into this microphone and then some audio engineer puts us all together.
I love
it. It sounds wonderful. And for the programming stuff, it turns out like, yes, it was really interesting. And I really love the intellectual challenge and the artistry of the different ways you can make something work with the programming and the kind of experiences you could give people when they're playing a game. But it's something that I don't know that I would be interested in doing full time. Like every now and then I fiddle with something on my website. Like I've got a few integrations on there. Occasionally I build a website for somebody, just a simple one. And that kind of gives me my fix, I call it.
Yeah, scratches your itch.
Scratches the itch. And so all three of the passions are a part of my life.
Yeah.
And there's no pressure to make money out of music and out of the programming.
That's great. So many different questions swirling in my head. One is just out of curiosity, when you sit down to play piano, what have you been playing recently? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I found for me the type of music I actually most enjoy is movie soundtrack stuff.
Yeah.
So like, you know, I'll find a good piano arrangement of it that I like and I'll sit down and I'll learn that, but not exactly, because there'll be some bits I'm like, oh, I'd rather it was done this way. I think that would sound better. Yeah. So like definitely not the classical thing. Like I remember one time I was playing a fairly complicated piece, but the only piece of music I had was a slightly simplified version. And I took it and I showed my piano teacher, because, you know, I was supposed to be working on something else, but she's like, okay, well, at least play it for me. Let's see. And I sat down and I played it and she was reading along with the music. And then I did something differently that's in like the real version, but wasn't written on the music. And she got a bit upset. Like, always got to do what's written down. I'm like, yeah, no, that's not really my thing. So movie soundtrack stuff. I like movie soundtracks because it evokes the emotions and the atmosphere of what's going on. Like, the piece of music actually now is the main theme from the Chronicles of Narnia movie.
Interesting. I love it.
Yeah. And occasionally, very like, cool. My kids throw in some Disney requests too.
Yes. Some sing-alongs.
Yeah.
That's great. For your coaching work, who are your ideal clients?
Yeah, for me, I like working with people who are doing something that's meaningful or provides a lot of value to other people. So I'm not really interested in maximizing the volume for somebody who makes a small amount of money selling crappy stuff, for example.
That
doesn't really give me meaning to help them with that. Even though it makes them happy and provides meaning to their life, it's not usually enough. Like I make exceptions. Yeah. It really mostly it depends on the business owner I'm working with. I tend to enjoy working with online businesses, whether it's a service business or they sell a product or they've got a digital product or a course of some sort, because normally I find they're more my people. Like, they have an interest, like there's a reason why they're working online instead of doing the traditional path. And we have some things in common then. And yeah, so any client up to about, you know, high eight figures, I transition them off to other coaches and help them hire a virtual CFO in-house that can actually work full-time and costs a couple of $100,000. That, yeah, normally people who are just starting out, I don't necessarily work with them, but I give them advice and there's, you know, some helpful stuff on my blog.
Yeah, awesome. And for people who are, because a lot of people listening are looking at a transition, often that transition does include, you know, starting something, maybe a side hustle that they hope to scale at some point. And I'll definitely link to your blog in the show notes as a resource. But if there's any, from your experience with working with businesses, is there any low-hanging fruit or common mistakes or things that, like, you would say, yeah, 90% of people when they're starting out do this or that incorrectly or should do this or that better? Like, what are your words of wisdom about starting?
Oh, yeah. There is, like, definitely 90% of people get their pricing wrong. Mm. Well, I'll say that the urge when people start a business is to lower their prices so that they can get their first clients, because they're nervous, they think that their business is no good, people won't trust it, so they lower their prices to get their first customers. That's not actually a bad strategy. That's not the problem. Mm. The problem is that they delay too long bringing their prices up to normal levels.
Yeah.
And the way that manifests is they can't seem to grow their business, or especially if they're running a service business, they find that they're working really hard and they're on a bit of an income roller coaster of, like, they get a lot of work in, they have money, great. And so head down, bum up, they do the work and then they're starting to wrap it up and they're like, oh no, I've got no more clients lined up next. And then they panic. There's this feast and famine cycle. And in a product-based business, it's a problem of growth because they can't reinvest the money they earn from their sales. They can't reinvest it enough in order to grow. Like, you just get stuck at a certain size if you're not willing to raise your prices. And to get the ratio between what your price is and how much it costs you to deliver the service or how much it costs you to manufacture and ship the product itself, if you don't get that ratio right, and there's stuff on my blog about what the ratio is and ways to improve it and things, but if you don't get that right, that's what it feels like. Yeah. And most people go through that. Unless they're really good marketers or they're really confident and they set their prices pretty high from the start, everybody goes through this. And so I would say, like, yes, okay, maybe give your initial customer some discounts, but try to limit it to that. And if you can't sell at a normal price, don't band-aid the problem by lowering your price. Actually work out why you can't sell it. Like, you know, is it that you're saying the wrong things on the sales call, or you think sales is icky and so that's driving away the person on the other end of the sales call? Or, like, is it that you're not sending enough of the right people to your website? Like, fix the root problem instead of band-aiding it with lower prices, because your business will get stuck. That makes sense?
I love it. It makes a ton of sense. I love it. Yeah, yeah. Just thinking through. Friends I have that have side hustles that will potentially always be a side hustle because of all these issues that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Of, like, you know, just even to reach sustainability, a sustainable income, for it to become less of a hobby that pays for itself and to become a income generating, you know, business, like, that you can count on.
Mm.
Like, it's a really important key piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, why don't we just need to move towards wrapping up here. For people who are, you know, just really enjoying hearing from you and your work and want to connect further, is there anything in particular you'd like to invite them to?
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, like I said, this is a bit of a passion project, and I've been recently inspired to set a mission for this year, like what I want to accomplish through my business. I want to find $10 million of extra annual profits for other business owners by the end of the year.
I love it.
I think all up, I'm at somewhere around $3 million all time so far, depending on how you count it. And yeah, so I want to get to $10 million. And so for me, you know, I'm going a lot on a lot of podcasts, helping people, like telling them about that margins rule of thumb.
That's
so
that great.
Can generate a bit more profit. I'm being fairly active there's a lot to follow. But also, like, one of the things I'm doing is, like, instead of the, you know, give me your email address and I'll send you some little PDF and then email you forever, like, instead of doing that thing, which honestly isn't as horrible as I just made it sound, but, you know, sometimes, yeah. You know, people are a bit reluctant. So what I'm doing is, instead, is like, there's a form, well, there's a couple of different forms on my website that you can fill out, give me a little detail about what your business does, a couple of numbers I ask you questions about, and I'll send personalized profit strategies, like, okay, go do these things and that will raise your profits. Don't need to jump on a call with me, don't need to pay me, but you do need to give me an update about, you know, how it goes, if you update it, if you actually implement it.
I love it. That's fantastic. Well, I'll definitely link to that in the show notes so people can jump in and get some strategies. And if you could find the rest of those millions in one of my businesses, that would be awesome.
Well, we can talk after we stop recording if you like.
But this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for just everything, you know, just for being so open and just such a great conversation partner. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
It was a pleasure. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you so much, Ben, and thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in. You can find notes for this show at themeaningmovement.com/BenMcAdam. That's BenMcAdam. While you're there, opt into our newsletter. You'll get updates about new episodes and all kinds of other free goodness around work, meaning, purpose, career, transitions, all of that stuff in your inbox for free. It's the best of what the Meaning Movement has to offer, so don't miss it. If you're not currently subscribed to the podcast, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening to this so that you'll see new episodes as they drop in your feed about every 2 weeks. Also, there are two ways that people find this show. One is through ratings and reviews. If you would please leave a rating and review wherever you get this podcast, that would be amazing. And the other is through word of mouth. Just an email or a text message sent to someone you know that says, hey, I loved this show and thought you might resonate with it as well. If this episode or any episode reminds you of someone you know, send it to them. I would love that. Thank you in advance. Our music is by Tom Warren. Our artwork is by Eleazar Ruiz. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll be back with you in a couple of weeks.